Track 12, and now we come to our feature item for this week, which is from TNF Soundings, and tells the story of Andrew Carnegie, who escaped poverty in Scotland and in 1848 sailed to the USA. He worked long hours from 12 years old in a cotton factory and later made a fortune in the US steel and railroad industries. In his later years, he became a world-famous philanthropist and is probably best known for funding libraries, but he also gave millions to science, arts, education, and promoting world peace. And the item is read for us by TNF Soundings' Liz.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride here. Now, the name for my choice for this talk is Andrew Carnegie. You've probably all heard the name. Most people know Rich Man Libraries. And it's remarkable how little more people seem to know about him. So I'll try to add a bit more to that information for you today. He was indeed born in a small cottage in Dunfermline in Scotland, and the family lived together in one room. They were all in the trade of weaving. They were skillful handloom weavers, just at the time when many working people and other folk in society were wanting to extend the vote to working people. So both his father and his grandfather were activists in the Chartist movement. But all these skills were at threat as the new technology arrived, and handloom weaving was going to be replaced by machinery. Economic decline faced the family. Extreme poverty was faced by them. His formidable mother, Margaret, ran a wee sweetie shop to try and give the family a bit more money. But they had letters from family members who had prospered in the United States. So when Andrew was in his early teenage years, mother, father, his younger brother Thomas and Andrew sailed from the Glasgow Broomalaw on a former sailing ship over to America. I think we have to say right time, right place, and also right health and right attitude. He set to work. Well, he was put to work, really, by his family. He worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, as a bobbin boy in a cotton factory. Then he progressed to be a messenger in a telegraph office. Now, this is where one of these meetings, which are scattered throughout Carnegie's life, occurred. He was, in effect, talent spotted by one of the managers of the Pennsylvania Railroad Company and became the secretary, a very capable man, a very clever man, and a man who seemed to show a willingness to work every hour he was given and interested in, what's that phrase, improving himself. The manager suggested some investments, and the small investments grew to larger investments, and the larger investments were all in the boom industries of America at the time. Because what did America need in the mid and late 19th century? This America that was emerging from the American Civil War, it needed to be rebuilt after the destruction of that. And America, this new, vibrant United States, needed railroads. They needed steel. They needed ships. They needed iron. And Andrew Carnegie was investing, and then more and more. And in fact, very quickly, by the time he was in his 30s, he was a very wealthy man. He also gathered around him some very astute businessmen, including his younger brother, Thomas. And that became eventually all formalised in his very own steel company. Now, in their years of poverty, he had promised his mother, Margaret, that he would make the fortune for the family and one day they would return in triumph to Dunfermline. And you know, it happened. In 1890, he took his mother back to Dunfermline. They hired a carriage and he went through the streets waving at the crowds who had all gathered to declare what a fine man our homegrown boy had become and what a rich man and what a good man to the people of Dunfermline because he was opening the first Carnegie Library. Was Carnegie an able businessman? Yes. Was he a sharp businessman? Certainly. He was no innocent. And in fact, during one of the most severe times of strike action, it seems to be clear that Carnegie knew that some very anti-union vicious practices were going on. One referred to most in biographies is the one called the Homestead Strike. But you see, Carnegie just happened to be out of the country at that time. So the mud didn't really stick too much to this image of a man from a poor, humble background who had become so wealthy. He was already framing his ideas of how to use this money. Now, he did not retire at 35, which he had earlier said he would do, but he did indeed say, a man who dies rich dies disgraced. And he retired at the age of around 65 and framed his ideas of what to do next in a book that he called The Gospel of Wealth. Andrew Carnegie did not give all his money away. Let's be clear about that. He lived in luxury for the rest of his life. He made sure his family and his associates were all comfortably off. But you can't take away from the man what he did for the world. He had more money than he could ever use. He wanted to use it wisely. I won't give you the full details. I would be here for 45 minutes and not about 15. But sufficient to say, charitable trusts were the way. It wasn't to be just charity, because Andrew Carnegie did not just want to give away the money to the needy. He wanted to give people the tools to raise themselves up. And I think the new way we would regard that is philanthropy. Who received his funds? Medical donations, the sciences, the arts, universities, even, of course, thinking about the African American folk recently released from slavery and giving money to the Tuskegee Institute, an institute for higher education. And perhaps most in his heart, the idea of world peace. More of that in a wee minute or two. His mother, Margaret, was devoted to our Andra, and his younger brother, Tom, was allowed to marry, and allowed to marry and happily marry Lucy, and his brother, Tom, 8 years younger, went on to have 9 children. And as the years went on, our Andra presented a few possible choices to his mother. But Margaret was having none of it. I think we would say she was an alpha mother, if that's a phrase you can use. But she had done so much for him, so I can forgive her a wee bit. But then she met her match. Because when Andrew Carnegie was in his middle age, he met Louise Whitfield. They shared a love of horses. They went riding together. They were engaged. They broke off the engagement. She was 20 years younger than him, but decided he was the man for her. And they jointly decided that they would remain engaged quietly and not tell Andrew's mother, and agree that they would marry, but not until Andrew's mother passed away. And the years went on, and Louise was there as an item, I think we can call it now. And indeed, when Andrew's mother passed away of pneumonia, 5 months after her death, and also the tragic death of his younger brother, Andrew, Carnegie married Louise Whitfield. He was able to enjoy over 30 years of happy marriage to Lou, as he called her, and agreed many times over that she was the centre of his world, that he ran his philanthropy ideas past her, and she gave him a daughter, Margaret, the companionship and support he had always sought. He was fiercely proud of being an American citizen. He thought America was a wonderful place for opportunities. He also had an abiding love for Scotland. So when money permitted, which of course it did, he did come back to Scotland and look around for a suitable home. Now, no return to the cottage of the Dunfermline days. He selected a run-down castle north of Inverness, Skibo Castle, and set about for several years restoring it, the building, and restoring the gardens. And when he was in good health, he spent around half the year in Skibo Castle, and there are splendid images of him wearing tartan trousers and a big furry dog enjoying the life of the laird in Skibo Castle. The appreciation of all the folk who were given the money clearly mattered to Andrew Carnegie, and in a very human aspect of his character, I think, it seems that he saved every letter of appreciation, whether from a large donation or a small amount to a family or some small organisation. And he had a small desk drawer in his study in Skibo, and it was labelled Gratitude and Sweet Words. I think that's wonderful. Money could not buy him everything. And it's clear that a central dream of his had been prosperity through world peace. He had paid to have the building of the giant peace palace done in The Hague and sought to encourage conversations, discussions, summit meetings. But his heart must have been very heavy as he saw the alliances gathering together in the years before what became the Great War in 1914. Louise recognised in a letter how bereft he was by this destruction of many, many lives and destruction that would take years to rebuild and recover from. This is what she said about Andrew Carnegie's heartbreak about the beginning of the war in 1914. Andrew was always an optimist, and he always tried to be an optimist, even as the disaster of the war came closer. When the war began, his heart was broken, and he had two serious attacks of pneumonia, and that just brought old age upon him. And I think, really, the war broke, it did break his heart. Andrew Carnegie never returned to Scotland. He had left before the beginnings of the war in August 1914, and he passed away in his American estate in Massachusetts in 1919 and was buried in America. Louise, his widow, continued his work, and then their daughter, Margaret, named after the formidable mother, continued the work as well. And Skibo Castle remained in the property of the Carnegie family well into the 1950s. Louise, in her own life, continued to do as many active works of philanthropy as she could, and set up specific charities during World War II. So Andrew Carnegie, the man that even with all his money could not bring peace, brought a great deal of funding to charities all over the world, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to his life. More than libraries, I think you'll agree.
TNF Soundings.